Hello and welcome to In the Booth on Sportsnet 650, your official home of the Vancouver Canucks. I'm Brendan Batchelor, as always, joined by Randy Jandez. The Canucks get set to begin a long six-game road trip on Saturday night against the Ottawa Senators in the nation's capital. A 4 o'clock face-off. We'll have it for you here on Sportsnet 650 with the pregame show beginning at 3. But Randeep, there's no shortage of news around this team to talk about over the last week since we last recorded one of these, and it's been one of the more eventful weeks that I can recall in recent memory for the Vancouver Canucks, hasn't it?
No doubt. Whether you look at who's in the lineup, who's not in the lineup, there's a lot of conversation around the Vancouver Canucks, and unfortunately for them, it also coincides with a little bit of a losing streak here. So a lot of conversation of who's going to be healthy, who's going to be back in the lineup as this six-game road trip kicks off.
Yeah, and you talk about some of their struggles. Let's look back at the game against the New York Rangers before we look ahead to this trip here, which I thought was a pretty valiant effort in spite of a lot of adversity for this team. You know, we already know Thatcher Demko hasn't played this year. We already know that Brock Besser's been out since he took that hit in Los Angeles, so didn't play on the homestand at all. But the surprising news that came out on the morning of that game against the Rangers was JT Miller going on a leave of absence for personal reasons. And in spite of all of that, the Canucks, I thought, put forth a very good effort against a very good New York Rangers team. And as Rick Tocchet put it, ultimately, their top players made a play in the third period. The Canucks' top players didn't make that same level of play, and that was the difference in the game.
Yeah, I thought the effort was strong from the group against one of the best teams in the NHL, as you mentioned, but that they did lack that home run hitting power to compete with New York late in the game. And listen, when you play the elite level teams, that one mistake can burn you. And that was something that happened in that late in that game, whether it was Elias Pettersson not being strong enough on the puck, maybe there as Zibanejad and him were battling at the blue line, you know, Carson Soucy and Tyler Myers chasing a little bit on that play. But the reality is you are undermanned as the Vancouver Canucks, right? Right now, without Besser, without Demko, without JT Miller, it's going to be tough. And they nearly could have almost squeezed out a point in that game. But let's be honest, I was very much of the opinion, I still am, I thought, you know, that was a valiant effort from this group. And there's a lot of folks heading into that game. It was going to be tough to get a point, definitely two against the Rangers to begin with. But you can be happy with the effort to say, all right, these guys played hard. 5-on-5, I thought they played hard yet again. But that one mistake caught them. And that will happen against the best teams in the NHL.
Yeah, so if anything, I would imagine they want to take that mentality and the way in which they played in that last game of the homestand with them on the road trip. They also may get some players back on the road trip. Thatcher Demko traveled with the team. I know he spoke with the media earlier this week at UBC before the club left on the trip. Did you get a sense from what we heard from Thatcher Demko? And again, this is, you know, with an injury like this, this is, you know, incredibly difficult to predict. But I start to wonder now if there is a legitimate chance that we see him on this road trip before they return home to Rogers Arena in early December.
Well, the work that he was putting in on practice at UBC before they flew it to Ottawa, it was a little bit more, you know, dynamic, going side to side. And I'll leave that to the goalie gurus to really break down every movement. But it looked like a player trending definitely towards the right direction. And Thatcher did not give us a timeline in the post-practice availability. He was saying, hey, you know, we've got a plan. This is the best I've felt in 7 to 8 months. The fact that he's on the road trip tells us something, that this is a player that's trending in the right direction. But overall, just understanding where his body's at, understanding what he needs to do and how to manage it. Like, that's what I picked up in his post-practice conversation with us. Remember, that was the first time he's talked to media since Penticton. So that does tell you something as you go out on a road trip. This is really the final chance to maybe talk to the local media here before you potentially play. And he was in certain practices, Batch, and you were there as well. Like, he was a full participant in some. I would say he was about a 60 to 70% participant in the most recent practice. So that's a good sign. Now the question is, you're out of town for 2 weeks. I think this is definitely trending towards the right direction. part of this is going to be how does Thatcher feel after every practice? But there's going to be so much up in the air about, all right, how does he feel after being, you know, a hard practice? How does he feel if he does get that game? How does he feel in and after that game? But this is definitely trending in the right direction.
Yeah, and the encouraging part of what Demko had to say for me was talking about wanting to push it really hard. And I think he was quoted as saying, like, put the knee through hell to make sure that he's not just going to come back and re-injure it right away and go out of the lineup again. So when you hear him talking about those sorts of things, you know that he's starting to ramp it up. And I guess the question then becomes, how does the knee respond to that increased workload? How does it respond when he actually gets back into games, as you allude to? Because there's not really a way to replicate what it's like to play a full NHL schedule and play game in and game out and travel and have practices unless you start doing it. And I do wonder if, even if Demko gets back into the crease, if they bring him along slowly and he's not all of a sudden the workhorse starter that fans might hope or expect he might be, while they make sure that this is a situation where he's not just going to come back and then be lost to them again right away.
And the workload aspect of it is really important, because sometimes when we watch a hockey game as fans, as broadcasters, we look at the actual saves that are made and say, oh, he only faced 15 shots or 20 shots or 25. But it's also, you're tracking the puck, even for every shot attempt that is blocked, for every, you know, play that is shot wide, the goalie is still putting in work. There's still reactions there. They're moving their body a certain way. So it's not only about the workload in terms of shots on goal and shot attempts, it's the movement. How does he cope? How does he react to that? And to your point, I think, you know, with Thatcher Demko and the expectation, if and when he is ready to go to be back in games, I think, like, you know, for a Vancouver Canucks team that is trying to get their goaltender ready and do have a certain amount of confidence in Kevin Lankinen, I'm okay with a platoon. I think you are a very dangerous team if you have confidence in two goalies and two goalies that are fresh. Of course, that brings up other decisions that you have to make, who's your starter in the playoffs and all that stuff. Once you get there, and those are decisions for another day, but I think in the meantime, keeping both goaltenders fresh, a platoon of 50-50, if that in a lot of ways could be an ideal situation for a Thatcher Demko coming back from injury.
At the very least in the short term. And then if things go well and he can ramp it up, then down the stretch later in the year, you might be able to get him some more work and have him peaking at the right time for the postseason. That at least would be the hope for this team. A couple of other notable news items that we should talk about. Brock Besser returned to practice with the team on Friday, albeit in a non-contact jersey. And while the organization has not confirmed the nature of Besser's injury, except to say that it's an upper body injury, I think, you know, we expect or we think from the hit that he took that he's probably been in concussion protocol. So the fact that he's able to come back and participate in a practice with his teammates, even in a non-contact jersey, is a pretty good sign. And assuming that he is in the concussion protocol, if things go well in terms of, you know, no symptoms reoccurring after a practice like that, I think you can start to think optimistically about the chances of getting him back on this road trip, which would be huge for this team without JT Miller for the moment.
Yeah, and listen, when you are missing that home run hitting power with JT Miller and Brock Besser out of the lineup, the fact that Brock is now skating, we've seen, you know, situations where he is at least getting some work back in the ice. And I think the first positive step was when the Islanders were playing and Brock Besser was back at the rink. And now you have a situation he's trending towards getting back. He made the trip. One thing for sure, I know that the Canucks are treating this very carefully. Of course, they don't want to rush a player back. There was no official designation for this injury other than upper body injury. But as we know, with the Tanner Jeannot hit, it hit a certain part of the body, and that was the head. So you got to be extremely careful with that. You don't rush a player back just because you need goal scoring. But if and when he does come back on this trip, this is a guy that was leading the Vancouver Canucks in goal scoring. He's got the one-shot scoring ability. But, Batch, I think with Brock, it's also that two-way game. He just evens out your lineup so much. You've got a player that you can trust defensively and on the power play. The last couple of games, without JT, without Brock, the power play has not, even though there's been, you know, a goal for Pedersen 2 games ago, really since then, the opportunities are not there because you have such an imbalance and a bunch of players that are kind of put together that haven't been playing power play. Getting back one of those players in Brock Besser, your leading goal scorer in the power play before he got injured, would be a huge, huge step up from what they're presenting right now.
Yeah, and just anytime you're missing top players, getting top players back is a big factor. And Rick Tocchet kind of alluded to this coming out of the Ranger game when he spoke to the media, and he said, you know, we're going to get some high-level people back here in the next few weeks. And I know some of that is probably spin from him to try and keep his guys motivated and believing after a tough stretch at home. But that said, anytime you can get a player of Brock Besser's caliber back into your lineup, you will be pleased to do that. Also, another interesting thing, before the team left on the road, they sent Jonathan Lekkermäki back to AHL Abbotsford and recalled Max Sasson, who, if he gets into the lineup on this trip, will make his NHL debut as a Vancouver Canuck. And there's a couple things I want to talk about here. First of all, let's start with Lekkermäki and thoughts on his short stint up with the NHL club. He scored his first NHL goal. He got some power play reps. I think he looked good in stretches. But I thought, and I'm interested on your perspective on this as well, Randeep, that there were also stretches that showed that there's more work to do for him. And I think he can take a lot of the positives out of coming up to the NHL team and getting those opportunities and being able to score a goal and feel good about himself while realizing that in order to be an NHL regular, he's got to go back down to Abbotsford and focus on some things.
Yeah, I think the pros with his game, with his stint in the NHL, were, of course, the one-shot scoring ability. The fact that he was, you know, taking a shot off the rush, hitting 94 miles per hour, tells you it's not an easy shot to take in motion, and he was able to snipe to score his first NHL goal. That ability is there. That quick release is there. I was impressed by his puck pursuit in those early games as well. I think that was something that surprised people to say, all right, that's a little bit more advanced than maybe we thought. But the other side and things that he's need to work on is of course, the two-way game, the ability to really, you know, have that neutral zone play, that defensive zone play. And Batch, here's the thing, right? You gotta, when you're playing next to JT Miller, and I felt like the leave of absence affected Lekkermäki too. When you're playing in the top six, your job is to, first and foremost, of course, play alongside a skilled player like JT Miller. And when he gets you the puck, put it on net, make an offensive play. And Lekkermäki was good with that, whether it was attacking through the neutral zone, whether it was middle drives. But once JT was out of the lineup and Lekkermäki was playing further down the lineup, you'd see how much his two-way game needs to improve to really play in those checking roles and be an impact piece. And just playing next to Teddy Bluger, that wasn't a fit for him. This is a guy that's offensively inclined right now, and playing further down the lineup is not suited to him right now. So you can go back to the AHL, pick up that confidence offensively and on the two-way game as well.
And on the other side of things, who does fit in a role like that? A guy like Max Sasson, who I think had another very good preseason and training camp. He got into a ton of preseason games this year, and he's got 9 points in 16 games with the Abbotsford Canucks to this point. I think another interesting thing about him is he can play the wing, he can play the middle, so it gives them some flexibility if they want to put Pugh Suter on the wing in the top six again and have Ratu and Sasson be your bottom six centermen. You've got the option to do that. Teddy Bluger is kind of de facto your second line center at the moment. If you were to do that, then you could put Bluger back between Joshua and Garland if you want. You could put Suter up on the wing with Pettersson. So there are options there with a guy like Max Sasson, who I think brings a lot of energy and checking ability, and that makes more sense to me in a bottom six role at the moment for this group if Lekkermäki wasn't going to get a chance up the lineup, as you talked about.
No doubt, 42 points in 56 games last year. He had 18 goals, so he's had to pay his dues at the AHL level. And remember, this guy was not drafted. He was a free agent signing, and somebody that is continually brought up by Patrick Alvin as an option at the NHL level. It took a little bit longer. He's finally getting that opportunity now. You'd expect him to draw in here because it doesn't seem like Brock Besser is going to make a jump into the lineup right away. So Max Sasson on that third or fourth line, I think, is a great fit, and it's good to see as well because he is taking real steps in the AHL. He's tied with the team lead with 9 points right now. He's an individual, as you mentioned, in camp. The two-way game, the ability to have show off that work ethic and that positional versatility, I think is going to be something that is going to be a strong suit for him in the NHL. Now, the question is, you know, how long is this run? How long is his cameo? If he can play well, you never know. You maybe get an extended look. But I think with the profile that he has as a player, whether it's playing next to a Atu Ratu or a Teddy Bluger, he fits that profile a lot better than Lekker Mäki, who still has to round out his game.
And the Canucks have used a lot of recalls this year and have had a lot of different faces from Abbotsford up in the lineup. And there's two ways to look at that. One is that's not great because it means they've had a lot of adversity. They've had some injuries. They've had some guys up the lineup and they've had to make some of those changes. But I think it showcases some of the organizational depth and the fact that, you know, Atu Ratu, Arshdeep Bains, Jonathan Lekker Mäki, Max Sasson, just to name a handful of them, have been able to get into the lineup, or in Sasson's case, we expect will get into the lineup and get some of that experience and then go back down and build on their game and use that as fuel to fire their motivations, because with these, you know, this number of players all competing for just a handful of roster spots, you're really going to need to perform if you want to stay at the NHL level or be in the conversation for the first call-up. That's one of the benefits of some of the adversity the Canucks have faced here early in the year, and the adversity that they're facing right now is it creates opportunity for your young players to get some pretty good experiences, and we've seen a number of those guys get that chance to this point in the year.
And Batch, this is an exercise for management as well, because this is a moment for guys like Arshdeep Bains, Max Sasson, Atu Ratu. Of course, Lekker Mäki had a role in that as well, but there's other individuals in the NHL and AHL level that they can show what they can do. And for management, you want to see what you have. You want to see internally, give these guys a fair look, because as you mentioned, you know, I'm sure we'll get into it later on in the show as well, with the trade deadline, as you're assessing your team for a long run or making the playoffs, you have to ask yourself, are the young guys ready? Are they capable of stepping in if we need them in March, April, May, and ideally June, of course. If you're making it into June, you've done well in the season and the playoffs. Are these guys ready? And right now, even though it's not ideal circumstances for your stars like JT Miller and Brock Besser, you're getting a real look at these guys to say, will they be something that I can use in March or April if need be? Can they play that style of game? So as great as this is for Max Sasson, Arshdeep Bains, Lekker Mäki, Atu Ratu, this is a real exercise of assessment for Patrick Alvin and Jim Rutherford.
All right, before we step aside here, because we're going to take an early break again and get to the mailbag in the second segment, let's look ahead to Saturday's game specifically against an Ottawa Senators team that's struggling a little bit. It'll be Travis Green against Rick Tocchet, a couple of old friends, and of course the former Canuck head coach now in the nation's capital. What are you expecting going into this game on Saturday between Vancouver and Ottawa?
Yeah, you mentioned Travis Green and Rick Tocchet. They shared a poker table once or twice in their careers, as well as two good friends who enjoy the cards. But listen, with this Ottawa Senators team, you mentioned it, they're struggling. They dropped a game most recently, of course, to the Vegas Golden Knights. And they're really one of their biggest weaknesses is their transition defense, an area that Vancouver's tried to become better. I actually asked Rick Tocchet about their transition game, and he said it's trending in the right direction. He wasn't happy maybe two or three games ago, but against the Rangers, scoring two off the rush, he liked the way they played. And Ottawa defensively is a real, I would look at their, you know, the bottom of their lineup with Adam Gaudette, Zach McKeown, a couple of former Canucks playing on that fourth line. Their bottom pair of defense is not great either. Former Canuck that features on that role is Travis Hamonic. You've got Artem Zub as a first pair defenseman. Like, there are some serious weaknesses in in-zone defending and transition defending. That's an area I think that Vancouver could, you know, target. Elias Pettersson was attacking the middle of the ice with Kiefer Sherwood. That top line was doing their job. They were able to create some opportunities. That's the area that I think Vancouver could have success against this team. Travis Green has these Senators playing hard, but there certainly are weaknesses on this team, and it's the perfect time to play them right now as they've lost four straight.
So we'll have the Canucks and Senators for you on Saturday on Sportsnet 650. And when we come back on the other side, we'll get into the mailbag and answer your questions right here on In the Booth on your official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to In the Booth on Sportsnet 650, your official home of the Canucks. Brandon Batchelor and Randeep Janda with you. As always, if you've missed any part of the show listening on the radio, it lives as a podcast as well on the Canucks Central podcast feed. Make sure to subscribe to Canucks Central. You get the daily show every weekday with Sat and Reach. You get every Canucks postgame show with Sat and Bic, and you get In the Booth every week with us as well. And Randeep, as we always do here in the second segment of the show, let's open up the mailbag. And we start with a question from Andy on Twitter, who writes in and asks, why is there such a reluctance to split the Soucy Myers pairing? And I'm actually going to pair this question with another one from Woodrow, the eligible bachelor on Twitter, who says, does Eric Brännström deserve to be elevated up as a top four defenseman? So because those two questions are so connected, I think we can address them together. My initial reaction to Andy's part of the question is the reluctance to split those guys up is because they played pretty well together last year down the stretch and were a big part of the Canucks' success late in the season and into the playoffs. And I think Rick Tocchet believes that those guys can get back to playing that way, hopes they can get back to playing that way. And that's why we haven't seen them split up yet this season. But I do wonder if they continue to struggle as they have, if a move to tweak the pairs is coming soon.
Yeah, to answer the first question, why they haven't been split up is, you know, going back to last year, how many defensive pairings on this Canucks team have the length, the size, the mean streak when they play well compared to Soucy and Myers? Not many, right? And last year you had maybe a couple more pieces with Ian Cole, you had Zadorov, you had some versatility within the lineup. Right now, this Canucks team does not have that. So I think Rick Tocchet sticking with this pairing, in my personal opinion, is the right move. When they play well, they are unique. They're good at, you know, making those decisions in their own zone, whether it's Soucy, who played like it was in a bit of a rocking chair last year when he did suit up in 40 games. Like, he was very poised on the puck. He impressed in that regard. But Batch, really where this pairing is good is being nasty in the corners and denying the zone. So I can understand why people are saying, hey, Brännström, elevate him. But one thing we have to be really careful with Eric Brännström is he has also, you know, cracks in his game defensively as well. If you put him in a second pairing, if you elevate him and you give him a little bit more ice time, he's more of an 18-minute player rather than a 15- or 16-minute player, there are going to be some potential growing pains there from the kid as well. So I think where Brännström is right now as a third pair is fine. Like, he's impressing. He's brought some edge to his game. It hasn't been perfect. But with Soucy and Myers, they do deserve that extra long look. They have not been good. I would definitely admit that. And, you know, we all watch the games. There's a certain undecisiveness in Carson Soucy's game right now, which he has to get rid of. And he has to play a little bit more decisive hockey. He's got to make those decisions quicker. I'm still of the opinion that you got to keep Soucy and Myers together.
Yeah, well, and I think that's the thing. And Brännström's getting a lot of love lately, and rightfully so, for the offensive side of his game. But just look back at that play on the Ilya Mikheyev goal in the game against the Blackhawks last weekend, where he essentially gets bullied to the front of the net by Nick Foligno off the rush. And then the Blackhawks score on the rebound as a result. So, like, Brännström's puck moving ability, great. Willingness to get up in the play, great. Ability to get his shot through, great. We've seen him elevated to the second power play unit with Hronek, putting two defensemen on that unit. I think all of those things are great. But if you're going to play some of those bigger minutes, and really, Soucy and Myers are deployed as a matchup pairing a lot of the time. So, you know, I'm okay with trying to find some more minutes for Brännström, and I think putting him on the second power play unit is an opportunity to do that. But the style that he plays, while it can be helpful, and, you know, I will probably see his minutes elevated in games where they trail and need goals because he has offense to him, but I wouldn't put him in a matchup role. I don't think that is the best for the Canucks, and I don't think it's the best thing for Eric Brännström either.
Well, that's the key, though, right? We look at the last game when they played the Rangers, and he was playing 15:48 compared to 14:49 Carson Soucy. But those minutes are very different. Those for Carson Soucy, those are tough minutes. Those are generally against the best line from the opposition. And against the Rangers, it was mostly against the Zibanejad line and Kreider. And having that experience, whereas Eric Brandstrom, he's getting the softer matchups. Adam Foote, especially at home, is able to dictate the matchups that he wants that third pair out there. So, yes, just because a player is playing more doesn't mean those minutes are equal. And playing a second pair shutdown role, you know, for a guy that has his defensive play question, and that's really been the biggest question in Brandstrom's career, to jump up to play 15, 16, 17 minutes of tough matchups, that is a different ball game altogether. So with Carson Soucy, Tyler Myers, I feel like you got to lean into them with those tough matchups, or, Batch, you got to look outside the organization, which I'm sure is something that's been a hot topic in the city, and I'm sure it's a discussion point in the management offices at Rogers Arena as well, but that's something more about timing. When is it the right time to make a move rather than if they're going to make a move? That's my feeling anyways.
Yeah, and, you know, perfect timing as you sort of transition the conversation to options on the blue line outside the organization, because our next question on Blue Sky is from Eric, who says, are the Canucks pushing the panic button yet when it comes to the defense? Can we expect Jim and Patrick to make a move to add a true number three or four defender? And I think the answer to this question is yes, but not necessarily immediately. And, you know, I heard Elliot Friedman talking about this on Friday morning with Halford and Brough right here on Sportsnet 650, where it's clear the Canucks are going through some adversity right now. You know, Besser's out of the lineup, although he did skate with the group, as we've talked about on Friday, still in a non-contact jersey, but he's getting closer. That's a good sign. But you don't have Miller. You don't have Besser. Demko's not back yet as we speak right now. And when you're in a situation where you're going through some of that adversity and you look to the trade market to try and solve your problems, people can sense weakness on the trade market. And so they're not going to, you know, throw you a life raft. They're going to throw you an anvil or an anchor. So it might not be the best time now to make some of those moves. But I do think organizationally that Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin will prioritize shoring up the defense before the trade deadline. I just don't know if I'd expect it to happen immediately.
Yeah, and part of this is also seeing how this road trip goes, right? You want to see, do those players that we talked about respond? And Rick Tocchet was pretty clear after practice in Vancouver, UBC, before Vancouver flew out to Ottawa, saying, hey, I need more for some players. And you don't have to really be a rocket scientist to figure out who that is. It's the pairing we've been talking about, Tyler Myers and, of course, Carson Soucy. So is this an opportunity? If the organization had its way, I would assume waiting a little bit, accruing a little bit more cap space would be probably what they're looking at. You can buy some a little bit more time. You probably want to get into maybe closer to January before you make a deal like that. You know, December perhaps, but making that move right now, I don't know if it's advantageous fully, but a lot of it depends on what happens on this road trip. Is your team, you know, above water? Are they able to break NHL 500? Is that something that is manageable, or are you in a situation where your room needs something different and those guys aren't able to respond? So I think a part of this is going to be the team's play. Of course, it's a long-term need and a medium-term need for this team. You need an extra puck-moving defenseman. You need a 3-4. But Bash, some of this has to do with if you're able to work it a little bit longer, you might get a little bit more cap space out of it. You might be able to bring in a more impact player as you accrue that cap space without having to move some of that money off your roster. So part of this is also cap gymnastics, but we'll see. You know, it starts as early as on Saturday night against the Ottawa Senators. If the team is able to respond and those defensemen play better, Patrick Alvin gets a little bit more leeway to say, all right, maybe my room doesn't necessarily need this right away. Now, if they are in trouble, if they're flailing, then all of a sudden that decision might be pushed ahead.
Yeah, and the one thing we know about this management group is they like to jump the market. Now, in past years, they've been in LTIR, so the situation has been a little bit different. But if we look at their track record, when was the Horvat deal made? At the All-Star break. When was the Lindholm deal made? At the All-Star break. The Zadorov trade was made in early December. So I guess there's a possibility that we see some movement in the next couple of weeks. But again, because of the fact, as you allude to, that they have to accrue cap space, it's more likely that they wait a little bit longer. But if there's one thing we know about Jim Rutherford, he doesn't like to wait for other things to move and have the market set. He likes to be the guy that sets the market. And as a result, I would expect them to be proactive early in the new year would be my prediction, as opposed to waiting all the way till the trade deadline.
For sure. And that's the Jim Rutherford MO. But a lot of things can change that, right? Where it's based on need. It's if your team is in a position where they need something different. And maybe we've talked a lot from a buyer's point of view where Jim Rutherford has acted early in the new year and whenever he's been a president or GM, but he's also been very quick, even early on in the season. If he feels like a locker room needs a change, if the culture needs an adjustment, he's acted quicker than January as well. So it really depends, like I said, about this team's results. And if you start looking across the Pacific Division, Vegas is winning. Calgary somehow is still in that, second spot. Shouts to them for doing a great job. LA's competitive, Edmonton and Vancouver. And the points percentage for Vancouver is still good, but it's going to be play dependent, where if you play well, you can kick the can down the road and make that trade a little bit later on. If you keep on flailing a little bit, the Canucks might have to act a little bit earlier based on some of the way that Jim Rutherford has acted in the past on, all right, my room needs something different. I got to make a move.
Our next question is from Justin in East Van on Twitter, who writes in and asks, will the Canucks finish with a record better than 500 on this road trip? So Vancouver begins the 6-game road trip Saturday night in Ottawa against the Senators. We'll have it for you right here on Sportsnet 650, 4 o'clock puck drop pregame show beginning at 3 o'clock. So let's look ahead to the opponents before we weigh in on this. The Senators, the Bruins, the Penguins, then a day game against the Buffalo Sabres on Friday, then a morning game against the Red Wings Sunday, December 1st, and they finish up on their way back in Minnesota against the Wild. So 6 games, quite a long road trip here, Randeep. Where do you fall on what their record could be without JT Miller, we expect, for this road trip? And then things up in the air in terms of whether Demko gets back while they're on this trip or whether Besser gets back.
Yeah, if we were looking at this schedule a week ago, I would say easy 500, and you'd be expecting out of a possible 12 points, you want to be around that 8 to 10 range. With the changes to the roster, of course, JT Miller taking indefinite leave, with some uncertainty, of course, around Brock Besser, even though there's positive news there. Same with Thatcher Demko. I look at 500 as the goal. Ottawa, to me, is a team that, having lost 4 in a row, defensively not looking the greatest, transition defense is a mess, an opportunity for Vancouver there to start off the road trip well. Boston, that's a new coach bump situation, right? They're a team that is probably going to benefit a little bit in the short term at the very least. I start looking at this and I say Ottawa, Buffalo, and probably Detroit are the wins to me. The other ones are kind of up in the air. And remember, the challenge with that Pittsburgh game, you might be looking at that and saying, why not Pittsburgh? That's the second of a back-to-back. That's a tough game. So I look at the realistic option, depending on what happens with this roster, there's a lot we don't know on who will be returning. I look at 500 as the goal right now, just based on where this team is right now in terms of personnel.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And, another thing that we have to look at, too, is the Canucks have often struggled with day games outies. And, two of those games you talk about as wins, a noon Pacific time puck drop. So that's 3 o'clock Eastern against the Buffalo Sabres. But then a 9:30 a.m. Pacific, 12:30 Eastern start against the Red Wings. Those games are challenging when, you're in a different time zone than where you're normally at home and you're playing early. So 9:30 in the morning on your body clock, although thankfully that game's later in the trip for them, so they'll be more used to being out east. But those games are tricky too, not to mention the second half of the back-to-back against Pittsburgh. Not to mention, as you said, the new coach bump or the coaching change bump from the Boston Bruins without JT Miller, we expect. And who knows what the goaltending situation will be and the Besser situation will be. We'll see how that plays out. This is a tough road trip, a sneaky tough road trip for the Canucks. So I agree. You know, as much as they've got a good road record this year, they've played better on the road. You would like to see them have a winning trip coming off the homestand that didn't meet expectations, to say the least. But this is a tougher trip than it looks just on the face of it with some of the opponents. So I would say it's a successful trip if you come back at 500 or above as well.
Well, one of the things that works in their favor is the start of the road trip. They get to Ottawa. They're able to get a practice in. And then after the Ottawa game on Saturday, they play on Tuesday after that, which allows you a little bit of time. There's no back-to-backs right off the bat. So there is an opportunity to start off this road trip well, get those good vibes back in the room after a pretty, you know, dramatic week in a lot of fronts, whether it was on-ice results or off-ice. So I think, you know, the start of this road trip, if they can get those good vibes back, it leads you into Pittsburgh with potentially some confidence, and maybe there's some good news coming with the roster as well. We'll have to wait and see on that. But you're right, you know, that Buffalo game, not an easy one. The back-to-back situation is something that will be tough in Pittsburgh as well. But you've got the timing on those games that pose a challenge. But we've seen this team going back to last year. They were a resilient bunch. This year, we still need to see that consistently. And if you get those first two games back, I think that's going to be the key. Is that something they can launch off? But I think just based on the amount of, you know, really in and out in terms of lineups and people being called up and the injuries and all of that, it's going to be a challenging road trip for that reason. And the final game is going to be a tough one too. Minnesota's looking good this year, right? They got a Hart Trophy favorite in Kirill Kaprizov right now. As of right now, he'd be the Hart Trophy favorite. That one's not going to be an easy game either.
No, it certainly won't be. So we will follow the road trip with interest and see how the Canucks do as they carry forward. Another question here on Blue Sky from Resistance16, who writes in and says, Pedersen was playing hurt last spring, and there was zero sympathy from the head coach. It seems JT has been playing injured. Is it possible that Canucks leaders are being negatively impacted by an expectation to perform exceptionally while hurt? Hard to believe that the benching is unrelated to the leave in relation to JT Miller going on personal leave. So there's a couple things I want to say right off the bat on this one before we get into this conversation. One, Rick Tocchet said specifically that the leave is not related to the benching. And we don't have insider information. We don't want to speculate on what's happening here. So we have to take him at his word. So I understand if you want to be skeptical about, you know, JT Miller gets benched and then a couple days later he goes on leave. I understand that, but we have to take it on the face of it because we don't know the situation. We don't have all the information, as Jim Benning would like to say. So I'm not going to delve into that part of this. And in terms of the question about top players being negatively impacted by an expectation to perform exceptionally while hurt, there's a difference between injured and being hurt. And if you're in the lineup, if you are capable of playing, the expectation is that you play to the level that you can play. If you're hurt, but you're playing through it, you've got to find a way to play through it, got to find a way to impact the game, especially if you're one of the top players like JT Miller or Elias Pettersson. If you're legitimately injured to the point where you cannot play, that's entirely a different conversation. But if you're in the lineup, the expectation has to be that you can be a difference maker because that's what you're paid to be. And guys in the NHL play with bumps and bruises and, you know, obviously serious injuries at times throughout the year, especially in the postseason. And we saw some guys on this Canucks roster that, you know, not all the information came out about that last year, but there were guys playing hurt, playing, you know, close to the line of being injured in that second round series against the Oilers. But you do what you have to do to contribute to your team if you're going to lace up your skates and go out on the ice. And Elias Pettersson has not missed games, has not missed an opportunity to lace up his skates and go out there. And up until now in this personal leave, JT Miller hasn't either, save for the preseason.
Yeah, I think we have to be extremely careful on that front too, because, you know, every player, ultimately it's down to them. If they are hurt, there's a line. And of course, a lot of players, the way they're wired, they're going to want to play hurt. But ultimately, it's up to them to say, hey, am I helping my team or am I hurting my team by being in the lineup? That's a decision that they have to come together with the coach and the medical staff. And I think one thing, and we don't even know if that's the truth, right? This is based on the question that was asked. Now, also, I think the long game here with this team, everybody understands it's about later on in this year. When we talk about playing hurt and breaking through that wall and having the energy late in the season, it's late in the season. So, you know, I think early on this year, of course, you want players, if they can play and if they're not injured, to your point, you want them in the lineup. But there is a long game here. I mean, I'm not talking about the Vancouver Canucks specifically. I'm talking about any team. If there's a risk that one of your players might play through something early in the season and it's going to hurt you down the road potentially, you're probably better off shutting down the player to say, hey, we need you in January, February, March, April. Not even though those points count the same, you want a healthy player heading into the new year. So sometimes this idea of playing hurt and, you know, getting players to play hurt or this expectation of playing hurt, I think most teams would say, hey, we want you healthy for crunch time. So if you got to shut it down for a little bit, we're here for that. Of course, depending on the injury, if that's an option. So I really kind of, you know, when I hear that question, there's so much that goes to every case. Every case is different depending on the injury, whether it's nagging, whether it's an injury you have to shut down for. Can it get better with rest? Maybe it won't. But I think any team will tell you, hey, we want our guys, if you're going to play hurt, it's got to be later on in the year. That's when it matters the most, early on in the year. Batch, I don't know if it's worth teams to put their guys through that or even for the player to put themselves through that because it's so early in the game.
Yeah, and so ultimately to the question, I think the answer is no. There's not an unreasonable expectation that guys perform at a high level through injury with this team. I don't think that's the case. And I don't think that that's the way that Rick Tocchet would want to approach managing his players either. Now, you're right. Late in the season, in the playoffs, it's one thing. But in October and November, I don't think that's the case. I think JT Miller was legitimately benched for a bad play he made on the penalty kill in that game. I don't think it has anything to do with saying, you're banged up and that is preventing you from playing well, and I am holding that against you. I don't see Rick Tocchet being that kind of coach that would do something like that.
No, I don't see that either. And on the benching, I think, of course, when a player goes on leave right after that game, a lot is made out of it. And Rick Tocchet was very clear to say, hey, it has nothing to do with the benching. I think one thing we have to be very, very aware of is that that's not the first time JT Miller's been benched, and it probably won't be the last. Like, players get that sort of treatment, whether it's 5 minutes at a time or 10 minutes at a time. In this case, it was 14 minutes at a time. It happens all the time. With JT, it's something that has happened in the past as well. So this whole idea of, you know, this leave came after the benching, this happens to players all the time. So I'm not buying that as well. And that question kind of alluded to the, you know, it was a couple of questions in one there, but the benching and the leave, it's hockey. If you make a bad decision out there, if you make a bad play, your coach has the right to say, hey, take a seat on the bench for a few minutes. And it's going to happen with star players. It has all across the league. It's not just JT Miller.
And it has specifically happened with JT Miller under Rick Tocchet prior to this, as you allude to as well. Okay, our last question comes in from Mike again on Blue Sky, who says, for Saturday's game, will you guys call it the battle for the line blender, or whose line blender is it anyway? And this is referring, of course, our inside joke about Travis Green's line blender, available for three easy payments of $19.99. Black Friday's coming up, too, so you might be able to get it for even cheaper than that.
$15.99.
Yeah, exactly. But we've known Rick Tocchet to go to the line blender at times, too, and he kind of has had to go to the line blender here a little bit with some of the injuries and absences from his lineup right now.
Okay, when we talk about a line blender, it's such a cheerful thing for us, but anytime a coach pulls out the line blender, I can just imagine like a really pissed off looking face, as they do, because they don't want to pull out the blender. Even Travis Green back in the day, who, you know, had it patented, I'm sure. This is a situation where you don't want to take out that line blender based on the fact that you want your lines to be clicking the way they are. So I think with the Canucks changes, The Kiefer Sherwood one has been a strong change. This is a player that is showing he can play in the top six. He's a guy that can finish another goal against the Rangers. There has been some positive in this regard. Of course, Jake DeBrusk, I think he's doing the right things. He's getting into the right spots, but what do we know about Jake DeBrusk? He needs to finish on those. He's a streaky player, and against the Rangers, you know, two shots on goal, really two shot attempts in that game. So didn't have much going his way. He got into dangerous areas, but the shots were getting off. And I'd like to see a little bit more physical play from Jake DeBrusk as well, I think, on that line. You know Sherwood brings it, but you got to have a bit of a 1-2 punch there. So the blender is working to a point here. It might need a little bit of maintenance there, Batch.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, take all the parts apart and clean them and make sure they're all oiled up and good to go. And I'll leave on this. This is a story I've told before about what Travis Green said to me once about that line blender and about how he mixed his lines. Because I think at the time he was receiving some criticism in the market for mixing his lines too much and people saying, why can't he just keep, you know, a line together for five games and let them build chemistry? And how are they going to build chemistry if he doesn't give them time together? And he pointed to the top teams in the league. And at the time, he used the Tampa Bay Lightning as an example. And he said, look, John Cooper gets to roll the same four lines over the boards every night because they are consistent, because they play to their structure, because they play to the style that the team wants them to play to. They execute at such a high level that he doesn't have to blend his lines because he knows what he's going to get because they play the way that they're supposed to. They're consistent. They perform night in, night out. They're one of the best teams in the league. And his point at that time with a Canucks team that was obviously struggling and not making the playoffs was, if I had that quality of roster, I wouldn't be blending my lines. But the fact is that most teams in the league are still striving to improve and striving for more consistency and striving to reach that level. And so when you're not there, you do blend the lines because you're giving other guys opportunity if certain players you don't think are playing to a level that deserves them getting top 6 minutes or top pairing minutes or whatever it might be. So I know Travis Green got a bad rap in this market for the line blender, and we've turned it into a running joke on our broadcast. But I do think that that was more a virtue of where the team was at during Travis Green's tenure as the head coach, as opposed to a specific predisposition that Travis Green or that Rick Tocchet have, for that matter, to blend the lines just for the sake of blending them.
And that's the thing, Batch. Every coach in the league essentially has a blender because there's very few lines that you fully feel confident in. I'll go back to Toronto. Auston Matthews scored 69 goals, and guess what? Their lineup was in a blender too, heading into this year. And even in certain points last year, you can have confidence in goal scorers, but sometimes over an 82-game schedule, you need to mix it up. You need to change up the mix on the team. And the perfection line, the Colorado line a couple of years ago that was locked in a super line, and the Tampa lines are extremely rare. We joke about Travis Green and Rick Tocchet having the blender, but every coach in the NHL, maybe other than John Cooper back in the day and a couple of the other coaches, they do have one, and they require to change up the mix in their lines.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're just about out of time on the show here this week, Randeep. So before we get out of here, I'm going to have the call with Landon Ferraro of the Canucks and the Senators on Saturday night on Sportsnet 650, 4 o'clock puck drop, pregame show at 3. But you'll be on Hockey Night in Canada, Punjabi. What do you guys have coming up on your show this week?
Yeah, we've got the same game, Ottawa versus Vancouver in the early game, and game two, the New York Rangers, who the Vancouver Canucks just played, playing against the Edmonton Oilers. So a couple of good ones coming up on Saturday night.
And that does it for our show this week. Please stay tuned to Sportsnet 650. We are your official home of the Canucks. As mentioned, we will have the game on Saturday, and we will talk to you on this show again next week right here on Sportsnet 650.